Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands.
We're actually recording this.
I'm Chris.
I'm Lyle.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Yujiro.
Yujiro is just telling us how he wants to stuff mints up his nose.
Because of how refreshing it is.
But I understand. It'd be like Vicks VapoRub. You rub that under your...
Yeah, but you don't shove it up your nose.
Like having Vicks VapoRub under your nose and, like, the breath mints up your nose.
Yeah, it's not called Vicks Vapo up your nose.
I understood what he meant.
Fine.
To simulate that. That's like wasabi when you have... I always put extra wasabi on
my... Would
you
put that up your nose?
No.
There you go.
But if you eat enough of it, it's like it's up your nose.
This is true. This is true.
Well, I would imagine. I'd probably burn if it was in your nose.
Yes, it probably would.
Yeah. So what's going on, guys?
I don't know. Hey, Wayne, did you ever get paid for your Ubiquity books? Weren't they supposed to be a Christmas present?
They were supposed to be a Christmas present, and it was a Christmas present I bought myself.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I know. But at least I made sure I got... Well, I was going to say I was assured of getting what I wanted, but I pointed out exactly where they could have been obtained from, so...
And your girlfriend didn't buy them?
No, because they were not on a, air quote, Japanese website.
Well, they're very secure, those sites.
Yeah, and she didn't want to use her credit card to purchase something that was not on an, air quote, Japanese site.
Like a fly-by-night company, like yes. Japanese, or Amazon.com.
Yes. Yeah, and the books were not available on Amazon.co.jp.
More secure
than
more
Amazon.
Stable,
yeah.
Been around a little less.
So that's why you had to order them for me, and that's why I paid you.
But you were supposed to get the money from her.
I was supposed to get the money from her. Well, yes and no, because, like...
It's at that, riveting, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Because I told her, like, the first book.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of said, what the hell, I'll get all of them. I mean, there's only three. But... Anyway.
And you didn't get any money.
I didn't get any money.
Oh, yeah. At least my wife's honest in saying, no. What do you want for Christmas, or what do you want for your birthday? Oh, this...
No.
Can I say, ask for a book? No. No? Oh, okay. Close? All right. Thanks, Grandma.
Oh, socks. Great.
Yeah. You know what's worse than socks as a gift? Holders.
What?
What?
I mean, your grandmother made up something?
No. My grandmother, it was pretty funny. She got...
Like a serviette holder?
No, she got me these things. They almost looked like...
Sock holders were your feet.
Yeah, I thought so too. But they looked like a little pair of plastic glasses. In other words, it was two rings connected by a loop.
Right.
And I had no idea what these things were. And I was like, there was about 10 of them. I'm like, thanks. But at least she's like, they're sock holders. You put your socks in them when you put them in the wash so they stay together and you don't lose them. And I'm like, wow.
So it's even like for laundry.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And open the other one. It's laundry detergent.
You're
opening the box of Tide. And you're
it's actually Tide. You know what I was opening a box of? I was opening a box of instant mashed potatoes because my grandmother was convinced I was not eating properly at university. So that Christmas
you got a
was
gift
the
of instant mashed potatoes.
I got several boxes of it. Not to mention boxes of
that's all right,
the irradiated, no need to refrigerate bacon and the Parmalat milk.
I didn't know there was no need to refrigerate bacon.
Apparently there is.
I know there's no need to refrigerate milk, because you get that in Germany, and it tastes terrible.
It doesn't taste as good as regular milk, but I didn't think it was terrible. But anyway, fair.
Wow, that was all over the place.
That was a pretty crappy Christmas.
And that's why you ran away from home at 15?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, no, I was in university at the time, so that's why I did. That's why I didn't go back home. Anyway.
So what are we talking about today?
Now that I can get all the instant mashed potatoes at university, why do I need to go back home?
Yeah.
Oh, well, today we're going to talk about campaign confessions. Oops. This one for Vampire, the Detroit campaign that we have. So part one is going to be looking at the World of Darkness system and Vampire the Requiem system and setting. Mm-hmm. So we're going to look at what we like, what we don't like, and part two... Maybe a little bit more lively, because we'll be looking at what people liked and didn't like about the game I ran. So, and I'm very thin-skinned. So. All right, but on to the more neutral topic.
You have the book to hide behind.
Right. Oh, that's just in the book. So, what did you like about... Let's focus on World of Darkness.
Okay.
What did you like about that? Wayne?
It's a dice pool system, I'll say. We've kind of discussed this in the pulp setting.
I think we've covered World of Darkness a lot.
Yeah. The thing I liked about World of Darkness is how the skills that you had were not tied to a specific ability. So you could mix and match, because I guess the standard mechanic is ability plus skill plus any bonuses gives you your dice pool, and that's how many you roll. So in Ubiquity, something like Brawl was always tied to strength. All the skills had a very specific attribute that they were tied to, and you always used those two combinations. I mean, there were times when you could mix and match, but they were pretty infrequent. Whereas the World of Darkness, it's much looser in that it's the storyteller's discretion to pretty much mix and match an ability with a skill.
I see.
So that's why you might hear.
I actually didn't realize that.
Well, you know when I would say, you would say, for example, what do I roll for perception?
Yeah.
And said that quite often. Mm-hmm. And you say, wits plus composure, or if you have, for example, empathy, this would come into play, or something else, if you can think of what it is. It could be maybe even streetwise.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there is that flexibility. The downside is people then tend to forget what the standard perception roll could be, because you're often saying, roll this, roll that.
I think another example...
But I agree that I think that flexibility is really good.
Another example, it kind of didn't come up. An example they use in the book was like an investigation to find out something about a bullet. And rather than just using intelligence and investigation... They said, if you have a firearms skill, that means you obviously know a lot about firearms, and therefore it could be an intelligence and firearms role, because you know how firearms work, and you'd be able to determine sort of where the person was standing, or, I mean...
I see what you're saying, and I like the flexibility that's there, but I don't know, like you brought up just then, Lyle, it leads to a lot of... It's slower in rolling things, because you have to hear from the game master, from the storyteller, what you want.
Not necessarily, because it would be thrown out to you, whichever.
Mm-hmm.
True.
I think the players could say, can I use wits plus empathy? And you're like, yeah, do that, because it's a social interaction.
Yeah.
You're looking at the facial expression and that. So yeah, use that. Or is the person lying? You could use subterfuge, or you could use empathy.
I suppose.
To tack on to your wits to see if you can detect that person's lying. It does give you that flexibility.
Which is a very good point for it. I think that's nice.
But also, players have to buy into it. But I think if we looked at when we played...
Players also have to know about it, which apparently we didn't.
I guess fair enough. Read the book, you would have known that you were able to do that.
Didn't hide the books on you guys.
But I was going to say, I think it maybe requires not a more proactive player, but it gives the player could just say, you know what, I'm looking for this clue, I want to make this interaction, I have this skill, and here's how it's applicable, can I use it?
Yeah,
which I think is very good. It makes it hard to customize your character, and I'm speaking numbers-wise, mechanics-wise.
I think it makes it easier.
Well, if you don't know what skills are going to be required for a given situation, then how do you?
Well, then you just say, here's could you give an example?
Yeah.
Okay. If for example,
there are standard roles. I mean, you could they've actually have like two pages where they list all the role summaries.
Which is another thing that I didn't like all that much about it. Is because there was a big list that you had that I found quite confusing.
Two pages was confused. Wow. And you played D&D 4E? Okay, anyway.
That's why I stopped playing D&D 4E,
You're looking for that one-page rule book?
Yeah, I like those.
Wow. Savage Worlds all the way, I guess. Which apparently can be very confusing. But anyway, what was could you think of an example?
Well, okay, for this investigations skill. So if I'm doing an investigation, then I want to make a character who's good at investigations.
Right.
Then which skills would be most applicable for it?
Well, if you look at investigation as kind of an everyman skill, so if you want to make the ultimate investigator, or if you want to make the ultimate liar, then yeah, you would go into the ones that are like investigation or subterfuge.
Yeah.
If you want to make a doctor, yeah, of course, medicine.
Right.
But if somebody he's a soldier, or he or she is a soldier, so they know a lot about gunshot wounds, and they have a high firearms, they can make the case then. No, I use intelligent firearms to kind of stop that wound because I know what the damage the bullet can do.
Okay.
But yeah, you are going to have that very obvious skill, which you would build into if you're going to make the investigator. So somebody who puts, like, one dot in investigation but wants to be the detective just so they can max out on other melee stuff. And stuff like that. Yeah, then you're like, well, that's fine, but you've really specialized your character. Sure, you know a lot about knife wounds, but you don't know about investigation in general.
I'll say this.
Because you've subdivided it too much.
I forget the name.
So you still have the catch-all skills.
Well, okay. What was the CSI criminal intent with kind of like the psychologist was kind of...
Wait, Law and Order?
Sorry, maybe it was Law and Order. Sorry. Okay, yeah, Law and Order criminal intent, right. I think it was. Yeah. And they had, you know, your kind of ordinary beat cops, and they would probably have a high investigation skill. And then you have, I thought it was a psychologist character, kind of a minor... secondary character.
Oh, and regular Law and Order, they would have the... Have you watched the Law and Order?
I mix up the names. There's so many of them, right?
In regular Law and Order, and Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
Oh, it was Special Victims Unit.
They have the... They make...
Whatever,
They use the psychiatrist or...
Wong.
Psychiatrist or psychologist? Anyway, now...
Psychologist.
The point...
But they use him a lot, but in criminal intent, they...
Oh, yeah, it's just the two people. All right, so a special victims unit. Right. The point I was making, the regular guys would have a high investigation skill, right?
Right.
And he would probably have a high medicine skill. But, I mean, you could still...
Or academics.
But if you made that character, you could still use those skills to assist in an investigation. You could say, you know what, I have this skill... And I'm going to try and... I guess it's a little more difficult to say what kind of frame of mind the person would be in.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that would help in the investigation, okay?
Right.
So, there are the kind of obvious or standard couplings of of ability and skill. But the fact that you can... They're not always tied to that, I think, makes it a very flexible and powerful system.
Yeah.
As opposed to ubiquity, where the stat and skill are always tied together.
Does that go into physical as well? For example, if I was using a brawl, could I use my, pardon me for using D&D terms, but dexterity instead of strength?
Yes, you can if you buy a certain merit.
Okay.
I think the caveat is it's always subject to storyteller's approval.
I see.
And but in that case, they actually have a mechanic that allows you to swap.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not so... I guess it's not so much for...
could you rationalize
I would say combat's actually more rigid than actual skills.
With any system, I think, yeah.
But, I mean, if somebody were to say, I have a high medicine, so I don't really have firearms, but can I substitute my medicine to see, or melee, can I substitute that to see exactly where I can stab the guy to do the most damage? And, yeah, if the guy makes a good case, and he's like, sure, Jack the Ripper.
Right, so your victim, he's tied up in a chair. Yeah, okay, you'd know exactly where to stab him. You know where those arteries
actually, that's a really good example because maybe you want to stab the guy to not actually inflict a lot of damage. Well, if you look at the movie Scream.
The world of darkness is creepy.
It's like, where are you going to stab yourself where you don't do a lot of damage, but it looks like you were attacked?
Yeah.
So medicine actually might be the better.
Yeah, which makes sense. Medicine might be a better skill than melee if somebody was incapacitated.
Go back to that campaign confessions.
You're playing a serial killer. I mean, the World of Darkness is the system for you. Really.
they actually have what? World of Darkness, like Slasher.
Yeah.
There's a splat book. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, that's what I think one of the strengths of the system, or something I really liked.
All right, and in contrast to the older World of Darkness system, it is how they've streamlined combat, where you basically make that one roll, and you got that the person's defense is opposing, but you make the one roll and it determines whether or not you hit the person and how much damage you do. Mm-hmm. And I like that they kind of cut out that secondary roll to see how much damage you do. Ostensibly, it makes the combat faster. Yes.
I really like that part about World of Darkness, where your two-hit roll also determines how well you hit as well. I like that a lot.
Yeah. And I like the different types of damage that you could do. You could do bashing damage, lethal damage, and if you're using supernatural, aggravated damage. And that's like the silver bullet to the werewolf.
GURPS does a lot with that too, doesn't it? They have different damage types.
Yeah. Apparently, listening to other podcasts in the new 4E, there's like 12 different damage types.
Yes. Right.
And from what I heard, no chart about
them. And no chart about them.
Anyway, off topic, but yeah.
But no, I like that about combat too. Because it kind of represents how, you know, not only how
and
hard
then they can
them,
roll
how
over
well.
To different types of damage. Yeah, so you can basically you can beat the guy to the point where you start inflicting lethal damage. Yeah, yeah. You could kill them. So, some systems where they said there's non-lethal damage versus lethal damage, I think they've combined that quite well.
Yes, it's very elegant.
Yeah.
Actually, that was going to be one of the things that I dislike about
it. All right, well, go on. So let's open it up to what you didn't like, although Chris and you drove jumping the gun.
I'm just filled with hate, what can I say?
So what didn't you like about that?
Just a lot of bookkeeping. Okay, I've got 3 points of bashing damage and 2 points of lethal damage, and I've got 1 point of aggravated damage.
Can I jump in here and say I solved that problem?
You solved that problem.
I thought I was the one who originally came up with the glass bead idea.
Not for damage.
Well, okay, not for down. Fine enough. Not for damage.
All right, but
I sparked that awesome idea. Therefore, I deserve some of the awesomeness.
All right, you can share.
That was a begrudging.
So,
all right, if I ever heard one.
Sarcastic damage.
Yeah. Ooh, sarcastic
so,
damage.
Okay, so if you could explain my idea.
All right. The idea that Lyle came up with after I suggested something slightly similar was. To have glass...
Are you two going to rumble?
Possibly. To have glass beads equal to your health in front of every player. So, for example, if you had 7 health, you would have 7 glass beads in front of you, clear. Then we kind of talked about it, and he came up with bashing damage was represented by blue beads. Lethal damage was green.
Yeah.
And aggravated damage was yellow.
Yellow. And the reason, because of the sun for vampires, is aggravated damage.
And bashing,
and fire.
Bashing was blue because you get bruised. I think that's your argument. Yep.
Green because that was the other
color.
Yeah.
So that you had a visual.
Red was blood.
You had a visual representation of how much damage you had taken. And you didn't add the damage, you replaced the beat. So if you had 7 health and you took 2 points of bashing damage, you now had 2 blue beads and 5 clear beads, equaling 7.
If we could just back up, and this is where Wayne's idea was originally, because I was
awesome.
Which was amazing, actually, Wayne. Yeah, I had a difficult time tracking how much blood the different players had. Mm-hmm. So we were playing Vampire, and how much blood each player has determines how well they can resist Blood Frenzy.
Right.
And how much...
Also, how good you look.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it was really—it's really hard to see as on the character sheets. So Wayne recommended using beads to represent how much blood we had. So we used red glass beads to be your blood pool.
Yeah.
Combat was also confusing, and we wanted to streamline running the combat, but also so I could keep track and everybody could keep track. How much damage was being inflicted. So people would have the clear beads in front of them when they were completely healthy, and then I would dole out the damage. So people don't have to worry, am I getting bashing damage? Am I getting lethal damage? Is this rolling over? So I would just use the bead trackers and assign the damage that the person is getting.
You just hand us the colors, which was kind of fun, not exactly... I mean, you kind of know what weapons do what kind of damage.
Right.
But it was kind of fun. You get, punched or something, and, Lyle goes, oh, and here's your damage. You're like, holy crap! Four or five blue beads? Man, that really hurt, So
yeah,
it was
really,
kind of...
really nice way of dealing with that.
And we then ported that into the...
Changeling.
When we played Ubiquity and...
Ubiquity, because it's just kind of... Anyway, so we've completely debunked your part that you didn't like.
So I guess
it's a lot more bookkeeping than hit points. Hit points, nice and easy. You take 10 points of damage. Mm-hmm. End of story. I mean, you of course.
So we tried, but we didn't quite get there.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Of course, it's got its benefits, but I like it simple.
You're hard man to please.
I don't know. I just find hit points kind of boring.
Once again, same thing you said. It's weird to use a D&D 4E as a simple version of something, but...
Don't worry, I guess any game with hit points.
Hit points is the most simplistic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one number, and you don't worry. But I guess in Dungeons & Dragons, you kind of ignore non-lethal damage, because people just pull out their swords right away.
Yeah.
Or hit with the fireballs. No one's, tying a guy to the chair and punching him.
Yeah. Well, at the end, you can choose, I'll knock him out with my sword blade or something.
Yeah,
the flat of my blade.
Yeah, you always got a minus to hit.
It's like in the comic books where you've created a superhero with a sword, and then you've got to justify why he's never actually killing anybody. And I'll hit him with the flat of my blade. We'll just carry a stick.
Yeah, right?
But if you're using the World of Darkness, even sticks can kill if you hit them long enough.
Well, I suppose that works in the real world,
too. Yeah, I guess so.
Never been in a fight, have you, Wayne?
not with a person using sticks. And then never been trying to kill someone with a stick. And besides, if you would kill someone with a stick, you just stab them.
Yeah, that's
all right, fine.
It's a rough neighborhood you came from.
Leave it to Philadelphia to bring a stick to a knife fight.
Whatever, dude, bring a rock. Anyway.
You know, something that I initially didn't like about the World of Darkness system, it may sound really simplistic, is the fact that it had a separate book. Because initially they put all the rules that you would need in the one book. Mm-hmm. So you basically just, and this is the old World of Darkness, where you would buy basically Vampire the Masquerade.
Yeah.
It's got all the rules you need for the basic system, plus the extra rules for Vampire. Mm-hmm. And here they separated where you've got all the general rules in one book, and then you buy the Vampire the Requiem or Changing the Loss, and it has the additional rules.
Yeah.
And I think initially that's a little confusing to find. The combat rules are here, but then it's kind of supplemented a bit because there's some changes to when vampires are in the combat.
Yeah. Mm.
But I'm a convert. I actually like the separate books, so much so that the next game I run is just going to be using the World of Darkness book.
Mm-hmm.
So something that I initially didn't like, the separate books, I now really like and agree with.
Why is that?
Because I actually really like the system, the World of Darkness system, and by putting it in a separate book encourages you to run your own games mm-hmm. with that rule set. And
also
for whatever reason, I maybe it's just the type of person I am. If I were to buy Vampire the Masquerade, then you're just only playing Vampire the Masquerade.
Right.
And by just having that separate book opens me up to the possibilities of what I can or can't do with it. And I think I'm going to run Hard Boiled. This morality system that they have here mm-hmm. is great for that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to use that system for Hard Boiled, and for whatever reason, I probably wouldn't have cottoned on to that idea when it was built into all, like the werewolf, the vampire, and the changeling settings.
That's a good point. And conversely, I was going to say, you look at the World of Darkness book, it's about 220 pages, right? I just counted. And the vampire book is 300 pages, right? So having the core setting inside the book would have reduced the amount of vampire fluff and setting and crunch just because of book size limitations.
See, I was going to ask that because you're saying the two books combined, or was it going to be like a 500-page
book? Well, that's what I mean. It probably wouldn't have been.
I found in the older books, like, for example, Combat, I found it very hard to wrap my brain around it. Maybe I'm a bit slow. But The World of Darkness, maybe because it is a separate book, the system is a separate book, they were able to provide a lot of clear examples.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's filler by any means, but because, separating it and then they don't have to worry about, like, selling a 500-page book or a 600-page book, that's just going to fall apart anyway.
Yeah.
They can provide a lot of good examples of what happens in vehicle combat,
mm-hmm.
What happens with the different damage, which, I agree with you, Jiro. It can be a little bit confusing at first. We tried to use the bees to simplify it.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently we failed.
No,
but
I like
think
the
examples they used in the book were quite clear and allowed you to follow, so what happens in this situation or what happens in this situation? And I thought they did an excellent job.
Hmm.
And by having the separate book, perhaps allowed them to do that.
I agree with what you said about, it doesn't encourage you, but at least sort of you can play other games with it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you did, like you gave me that Vampire Dark Ages book, that's the old World of Darkness with the setting and the rules in it.
Yeah.
And you can pretty much only play Vampire Dark Ages with that book.
It's just a self-imposed or an unconscious mental block, because you can use Vampire Dark Ages and run realistic medieval game, but I was just putting up that block, and by just separating the book,
it makes it,
I would think, oh, great, I can use this.
Yeah, it makes it
to
easier.
To run
Different kind of game.
And it's also allowed them to kind of spin off just stuff about World of Darkness.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where here's the World of Darkness armory. You can use this. And they were actually doing it in the old World of Darkness, where they would have like World of Darkness books, which they say, oh, you can use this for any setting. Mm-hmm. And this just makes it easier. Here's the armory. Here's the armory reloaded. Both excellent books, by the way.
You
can use these in all the settings.
Yeah.
I think I brought this up in the Pulp episode, but there's talk of the Ubiquity system actually coming out with its own kind of core rule standalone book, separate from the Hollow Earth Expedition setting book.
Oh, okay.
Because currently it's one book.
I was confused which one came first when he said that.
They're actually together. You get Hollow Earth Expedition, which is the setting and the system all in one book. And there are a few other games that now use the Ubiquity system, and there's talk about kind of a World of Darkness-esque standalone. These are the core Ubiquity rules, and now go and play whatever setting you want with this rule set.
Hmm.
Which I think it makes it... Does it encourage you to play a different setting? I don't know. It definitely makes it easier because there's kind of nothing in that rule book that you have to strip out and say, you know what, I'm not using this because of the setting.
Well,
Dissenters?
Well, no. I
That's right.
Okay. It's on... I forgive me. No, I said this also during the pulp game as well, that it's just a matter of personal taste. I find it... It's almost kind of frightening to roll dice in the World of Darkness because you only have a 30% chance of success on each die.
Okay.
And that's a bad thing?
Oh, no. Exactly. I don't want to sound like it's critical of the system, but it really does sell kind of that dark, like dangerous kind of world to it, which is probably what they were going for. But I don't know. It's always just...
World of Darkness, dude.
Exactly. But it's kind of whenever I was trying to do something and it came down to a roll, it was kind of scary to do that roll. Because the chances are that I'm going to fail it.
I could see that. But as Yujiro pointed out, one of the things he didn't like about the Ubiquity system is that it didn't have the 10-again rule.
Oh, the exploding dice.
Yeah, the exploding dice.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't bring that up as something you liked.
That's
do you not like it?
Probably because it's not that
big a deal.
Big a deal.
Yeah. And I mean, I like the... What did he call it? The exploding dice thing. But on the other hand, I also didn't like the dice pool mechanic. It's just way too many dice to roll at once.
Oh, okay.
Hey, no. I just like D20 modifier. You know, keeps the table nice and clean. Don't have to like lug around 10 D10s.
You didn't lug around anything.
Well,
be fair, because in D&D, then you roll a D4, a D6, a D8, a D12. So it's not like you've cleared the table of dice.
Especially not with you guys around.
Yeah. I don't know, like, granted, yeah, World of Darkness, each die does have a 33% chance of success, whereas, I don't know, I guess you could kind of look at it and say, here's my dice pool, that means on average I'll get this many successes.
Right.
That's what I liked about the Ubiquity system.
Well, it's the same thing, right, but with, like, not to get into bogged down with, which is better, but the D20, I mean, that's a lot of variation with the D20. Right,
but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Sometimes I think it is.
It depends on your outlook on it.
I think it's kind of a bad thing. Where, I mean, like even if you're, I mean, unless you're going against a really low number in the D20 system, you can't reliably judge whether you're going to get it or not, because
which some people like though. I mean, some people like that the game is that variable.
I don't.
Which is fine. Yeah.
My feeling is like the higher you have a the higher your skill, the more reliably you should be able to do kind of easy to middling tasks.
Isn't that the case with D&D?
Isn't that what the difficulty class or whatever is supposed to represent? I mean, you have the mundane stuff is like a DC of like 10 or 15 or something, and like the difficult stuff's...
Exactly, and if you have a +5 to that, that represents your skill.
Yeah, but even if you have like a +5, I mean, you're going against DC 15, right?
Oh, actually, then
we're discussing D20, aren't we?
I like the fact that you can mix and match. And World of Darkness does have that. You can kind of create your own dice pool each time, mm-hmm. So it does have that flexibility.
So
some people like it, some people don't. I don't think it's a great debate.
Well, it was. You stepped in and quashed it. All right.
Well, you obviously. Oh no! Go ahead.
I think that's a good point. Yeah, obviously, you feel strongly one way.
Is there anything Chris or Yujiro can say that's going to sway
you
about
dice pool?
You guys made your. I think you made your point.
Dice pool sucks, and move on.
We've made those points as well as can be made.
Yeah, I'm going to beat that dead horse. Goddammit.
Well, let's turn over to Vampire: The Requiem. The additional rules that they add to the system, as well as the setting. What were your impressions of Vampire: The Requiem? Chris?
The setting overall I quite enjoyed. Mm-hmm. I really liked the parts that they decided to keep of the vampire. It keeps with kind of the modern idea of vampire, like something out of the Blade comic book series or recently movies. The thing that crosses don't do very much to, or don't okay. do anything to vampires. Okay. And but some of the other things, like stakes, have a minor effect on them.
Stakes have a pretty major effect, dude.
Does that knock them out?
No, you get staked. You're immobilized,
yeah.
but you still have to spend a blood point to wake up every night until you just run out of blood points, and then you go into torpor until someone else removes the stake from you.
But it doesn't kill you.
No, it essentially takes you out of the game.
Okay.
Semantics, but yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
We all know Chris loves semantics.
So do you.
Apparently so. All right, anyway.
Right, sorry, right. So basically, it doesn't follow the classic mythology. Right. It's kind of incorporating how a lot of films and books are updating it.
Absolutely.
Updating mythology and things. Yeah. Some things they keep, some things they don't.
Ooh, and I just like where the vampire tradition mm-hmm. is now compared to where it was, say, in the Bram Stoker era. Mm. It might be really nitpicky, but the one thing I really don't like about it, and I've said this before, is that vampires can't see in the dark.
Yep.
In the system.
Yeah, you said that.
I think that's just insane. They can only act at night. They hunt at night.
And we should say, for anybody who hasn't played Vampire, there's a special ability that vampires can get, like special power. Mm-hmm. So some vampires have that ability, and some vampires don't. But you could, I guess you could even say, just to broaden that, a lot of... Because what they've done is like parceled out the powers. Mm-hmm. So vampires can't do everything. You brought up Bram Stoker. They can't do everything Dracula did.
Yeah.
So they're not all super strong. They're not all super tough. They're not all of them
super can... charismatic.
Or super charismatic. Or they can't transform into a wolf or a bat.
Right.
Some of them can, mm-hmm. but some of them can't.
Yeah.
Some aren't as well. You said about the super charismatic.
Yeah, I think that kind of gets back to, in a previous episode, what I said I kind of didn't like Superman. But Superman can do everything,
right.
and therefore kind of nothing's a challenge for him, in my mind at least. Other people may disagree. But I think that's why they kind of compartmentalized the different powers and saying that, you know, kind of...
Oh, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying...
I realize you weren't saying Chris's point. No,
right.
I realize you weren't saying it's a bad thing. I just kind of see it as, if everybody had all those powers, I think vampires would be pretty boring.
It'd be a very different game. It would be like a superhero game.
It would be a superhero game, and I fall back on that.
But I still think it's dumb that they can't see at night.
Did you take the power to see in darkness?
Should you have to? Are you a creature of darkness? I mean, come on.
Creature of the night.
Exactly, but I can't see.
Oh.
Thunk.
Who like... put this ball here?
I suppose it is nitpicky, but...
Would it be a different game if vampires could see in the dark? Maybe.
In the modern setting? Not really, no, because there's lights. But, man, you take that the medieval setting
Dark Ages.
What the heck?
I thought that was...
Vampires burn really easy. Fire is extremely dangerous to them. There's no electric lights, and they can't see the dark. How the hell do they get through the woods?
I thought that was one of the interesting parts of Vampire Dark Ages, you would have to carry around a torch, and you would have to carry around a candle to see in the dark, some of them, unless you took that power.
Yeah.
And
It's just like kind of saying your character has turned into a mermaid, but he can't swim unless he takes a power.
Oh, it wasn't that?
I mean, come on.
Oh, that's a bit much.
Okay.
Anyway, like Colin Fowl on that.
That's just a minor thing, right?
Yeah. Oh, I'm a big fan of Vampire, both The Masquerade, the original one, mm-hmm. and Requiem. I would say, though, when I opened up the Vampire, of course, you know, first impressions, but when I opened up Vampire the Masquerade the first time, it blew me away. Like, mm-hmm. those the seven clans and the way it was laid out and how each clan seemed to be very, very different from each other. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they added more clans to that.
I think they ended up with 13.
So a bit too many. And then opening up the Requiem... Oh, and also Vampire Masquerade had a very strong mythology. Mm-hmm. And I think we discussed that a little bit in the religion episode.
Yeah.
But where, yeah, all vampires are descended from Cain, and you're like, wow, I'm just really drawn into that. So Vampire Requiem, and I can understand, they decided to make it more open. Mm-hmm. And I think some people are going to love it, some people are going to love it less, or hate it.
If that's
where they say, we don't exactly know where the vampires come from. And I think that makes it better, I guess, to play.
Because
you don't feel like the world is mapped out for you. But as far as like opening the book and getting blown away, it has less of an impact, at least for me. And I found the different vampire clans less distinct.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least the new ones, like the Deva, like, well, I don't know. They didn't really seem that distinct. as distinct as, let's say, the Toreador.
Yeah, I think
from the other clans. Mm-hmm.
They did seem to water down. I don't know that much about the old World of Darkness, mm-hmm. the old vampire, but from what you've described, they seem to water down the clans. But I think you were saying the Nosferatu before were really disgusting creatures. They had, like, deformities all over the place, but
they still do.
They
kind of gave people an out to say, oh, you're creepy. So you can look pretty normal, but your aura or your smell is a bit unsettling.
Did they?
Yeah.
I thought you still kind of had to take a physical deformity.
They were horrendous in the previous one, and a lot of the pictures that you do see are of that style. But basically, they're saying it's not necessarily your appearance; it's how people are around you. When they're around you, they kind of feel that there's something creepy about you or unsettling about you.
But I do like the different. I'm sorry, was it clans like Nosferatu and
those
I really like the clans because, like I said before, how they have that. They have kind of that modern Anne Rice feel as some of the clans do, but you can also choose the different clans. The different aspects of vampires, you can choose what you like about it and develop your character in that
sense. And both versions have the clans.
Yes.
The Requiem has added the covenants. Mm-hmm.
And I think that... I think that kind of allows... sorry, I lost my train of thought. I think that allows you to kind of differentiate... In my opinion, it kind of makes up for the lack of the extra clans because
now you
have in Requiem you have 5 clans and then you have 5 covenants, mm-hmm. which gives you 25 possible different options.
Yeah,
actually it gives you 30 because you could choose to be unaligned.
Yeah,
not be part of a covenant. So it's not exactly the same, but I think there's they chopped off a number of clans. But I think you, and plus, the powers you take are not dictated by the clan. I mean, you're better at some or worse at some because of the clan you've chosen, but you're not prevented from taking any powers. So I think the flexibility of what clan you choose, what covenant you choose, and then what powers you choose to pursue, give you a lot of options and kind of make up for that the lack that would be in Masquerade. I guess.
Yeah. No, I'm not really talking a numbers thing. I just found in the previous one, I don't want to compare editions too much. But Edition Wars too much. But I just found them fairly, fairly distinct and iconic. Mm-hmm. And maybe because they were saying, okay, now this is the Anne Rice vampire. Bam. This is the Dracula vampire. Mm-hmm. Bam. And of course, they parcel out powers, so the Dracula vampire is kind of spread out a bit.
Yeah.
Here is your Near Dark Lost Boys vampire. Mm-hmm. Bam. So... I found it less so in Requiem. Covenants, I don't know. I don't know if I'm pretty neutral on covenants. I can't say I really like them, but I certainly can see the reason for having the covenants. And I've always kind of likened it to, like, your clan is your family. Covenant is, like, your political affiliation or thing. Like, you don't choose your clan, but you choose your covenant.
Yeah.
I just don't find them... if you got 5, I'm not sure. Again, it's like with those... If you had... only 5 clans, shouldn't they be even more distinct from each other? And I didn't find that. And the same with covenants is that one, the Carthians, I'm not really sure that you're going to waste one of your covenants on that. Kind of these democratic, neo...
I saw more political communist kind of...
Or communist, I guess.
I
thought it was kind of like, you're kind of wasting a whole covenant on something like that.
Hmm. Speaking of things where the jury is out, I'm still wondering about... like how a group of characters works together.
And I think that's why they added covenants.
Yeah,
yeah. So
people can pick maybe different clans, then they're affiliated or they work together because it's through the covenant.
Which is, yeah. Which
or
is,
maybe they're all the
same
clan, but they're all part of different covenants. So they have some sort of connection. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they call them like coteries, which basically is your little group.
Your party, yeah.
And for whatever reason, you've made an alliance.
I don't know, but they set it up... Exactly. They set it up where, like, vampires are all inherently distrustful of each other, and they don't... They're very individually motivated, and it just doesn't seem to work as a group very well.
But I think...
They even have that predator's taint rule where...
Yeah.
Where if... How you... And they're trying to play up, you are predators. So like predators in the wild, mm-hmm. if you meet... one that's more powerful than you, you're going to be a bit fearful.
Exactly.
And if you meet one that's weaker, you might want to just attack it.
Mm-hmm. Or if you meet a strange one, you just kind of automatically go on the offensive. Right. Like, who is this trying to...
I didn't like that mechanical rule. I understand what they were kind of going with it. Yeah. But I mean, and here's a tip. Any rule book that you're looking, if you're reading through and they actually, as they're explaining the rule, then quickly say, oh, but feel free not to use this, then probably don't use it.
Yeah,
because even they're not sold on it. And that's the predator's thing. But just to further what you're saying is, yeah, they're playing them all as these solitary predators, then how do they have like a community?
Yeah.
And I think...
Well, the community, I can understand, like the Invictus, one of the clans, they...
Covenant,
sorry.
No, sorry.
Covenants. They have a very strict hierarchical policy, and like if you step out of line, they might just kill you.
Right.
Something like that, which is understandable in this kind of thing. But actually, a group of characters where they're all about the same power level working together, you need, I don't know, it's...
Well, we've talked about that, and I said, like, a game, in my opinion, a game of vampire and maybe even, like, changeling or mage, the number of people at the table can't match, let's say, a D&D game. So, like, at a certain point, that vampire game's got to cap out on the number of players at the table.
Yeah.
Whereas a D&D, I mean, maybe you could have, like, seven. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't imagine seven vampires consistently hanging out.
No,
we had enough trouble with three.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's...
It also gets into the kind of stories that you tell, is that everybody's got their own individual story. Yeah. And it's called the storytelling system, so emphasis on the dramatic.
Yeah, but that's something that I also want to say to the opposite of it, is that even though at times it was very difficult in this recent campaign to stick together as a group, it wasn't ever not fun.
So. Well, I think that's kind of what I was going to say. Right? That's, well, I mean, you, Drew, may disagree. But
I remember part two is when you bash my campaign.
Yeah.
So save it for the next episode.
It is a very different...
Put my baseball back
there. Yeah, it's a very different game than say, D&D, where, I don't know, I think because of the setting, you know, like vampires being a sort of solitary predator, and yeah, they are all distrustful of each other because, you know what, they are essentially going to live to eternity, and they have to make look out for number one. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the setting, that's part of each of the characters, and... If you kind of go into the game knowing that, I think it makes for very interesting social interactions inside the party, and the game's kind of not built for that, but that's part of the setting, whereas in D&D, if you don't work together as a party, that's just because you're a bunch of assholes, you know? And you kind of have to go along with the group in D&D and... You know, vampire being the kind of game
it is. You have to play an asshole.
Yeah, you have to play. No, you don't have to, but it's a lot... I don't know, I butchered that point again, like usual. But I don't know. I think it allows you to tell not better, not worse, just different stories. Mm-hmm. Obviously,
maybe because the conflict the
conflict
inter-party conflict is the story.
Whereas
if you're in a dungeon in Dungeons and Dragons and you're walking along and people are bickering the whole time, it's kind of distracting from telling that dungeon crawl. Sorry, Yujiro, you were doing the thoughtful. All right, no. one thing about the setting again, I don't really have much to say about the mechanics because you can take or leave what you want. And all right, before I get into my point, you wanted to disagree with my setup?
No, mechanics. One issue I have is that if you want to be vampire-like and like be good at combat, it's pretty much not going to happen. I mean, you've really, because of the way the system's built up, you've got to focus on your attributes and your, like, combat skills before you can, like, focus on your actual, like, combat-y, like, vampire-y powers, I thought. Because, like, there's that one time you had us play those special forces NPC guys.
Yeah.
And, okay, our PCs, like, in combat, we have to rely on...
Special forces NPCs.
Yeah. Like, our PCs, we, like, all sucked at combat because most of us picked, these cool, like, Covenant powers and these cool, like, clan powers. It's like, this will let me do
more vampire-y kind of
things. And it's like, that's the way we went. So in combat, we'd have to, like, rely on, like, vehicles. We'd go through, like, one car per combat to, like, take out the opposition.
That was good fun, by the way.
But, like, the Special Forces guy, they were actually, they had the stats. And because they also didn't have to... spend any experience points on vampire powers, they could focus more on their kind of just increasing the size of their like dice pool, and they just got to like really kick ass.
I'm gonna say that any system, if you're gonna build a combat monster, yeah, at the exclusion of all their social skills or their mental skills, yeah. then yeah, you can build a pretty kick-ass character in any system, and is going to be pretty limited in other settings. But mm-hmm. I will agree that people come with the expectation that they're playing a vampire. Mm-hmm. And a vampire is going to kick ass.
Yeah.
And a vampire is a supernatural creature that is better than a human. And then they play the game, and the game doesn't necessarily support that because...
First time I tried to drink blood, I kicked my ass.
Well, that's yeah. because you just did it the wrong way. I'll say, like,
But I'm a vampire! I'm supposed to punch
you through a wall. I kind of disagree with that. Because I would...
With me or with you, Drew?
With the... I don't know if it's with you directly, but yeah. kind of...
You're looking at me.
Sorry, all right. Yeah. I didn't really...
Shaking your stick.
I didn't really expect to kick ass when I came in. Because, like, the way I kind of looked at the backstory of my character, and then, okay, he got turned into a vampire.
Okay, can I just back up?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
people expect to play... the Ubermensch, the Superman.
Well, the vampire...
And I don't mean Superman as in the DC comics,
I know.
But they, something...
I mean,
beyond
any vampire
human.
I've seen in any movie yeah. I've seen about vampires.
Yeah. So, but go on.
I
you didn't expect
so,
to be...
Like I read Dracula, the original Bram Stoker Dracula, after we started playing, mm-hmm. kind of get more into the mentality. But
great
like,
book, by the way.
Yeah, good book. I still haven't finished it. There's like 5 pages left. I don't know why.
Okay.
But anyway, like, I guess this will come up later, but, like, the other part of the vampires, like, they have that super charismatic...
Can I ask a question, then?
Yes.
I've never read the Twilight series or watched...
Neither have I.
Okay. And I've never seen any of the movies, but I think at least one of you has seen one of the Twilight movies.
I've seen them.
Sorry.
Okay, all right. You can fess up. I wasn't going to bag you. But,
watched it when there was a downtime and I needed that vampire fix.
You're wasting time justifying
Fine.
This because people are already making their judgments of you.
All right. Anyway,
they did it
your
a
question.
Long time ago.
Your question.
So in a Twilight... My understanding is it's kind of written geared towards teenage girls, young adult females. I'm not trying to bag you. So it's mostly about the romance, right?
Yeah.
But are the vampires in Twilight stronger, faster, tougher than the average human?
Yes.
To a godlike degree.
So yeah. So even somebody who would come from the Twilight experience and be mighty disappointed to play Vampire the Requiem, they'd be disappointed maybe in another way. But even though they're coming from that experience, which is all about the romance, they're still going to expect their vampire to be pretty amazing physically.
I do
hear you there. And I guess what Yujiro was saying, because you have to spend it on all of these vampire powers, it's kind of...
Yeah,
because it is a
be
point buy. It's sucking
amazing.
Points away
yeah.
from other things. Yeah,
I guess that there is a mechanic, right?
Yeah.
You can spend a point of blood.
That's
to boost your physical stats.
Yeah.
So we didn't. I guess we didn't really do that all that much. We did it sometimes.
Actually, once you've realized that the average person on the street, gangster, you did go try to drink from a gangster.
Yeah, after that first combat.
You didn't take on three of them.
No, he was just like a college kid.
Yeah, there were three of them.
No. That's what you thought.
Anyway.
Oh, okay.
So getting back to the point. There is, you can spend blood points to increase your physical stats.
And after that first combat, I did every single time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you guys took advantage of that. But I can understand the initial surprise. Whoa, I'm not awesome.
Mm, yeah.
Or I'm only awesome in some respects. I'm not awesome in everything.
Yeah.
The problem with the blood point mechanic, though, is that if you spend blood, you get hungry, and if you get hungry, you frenzy, and, like, frenzying just
Well,
sucks.
You could do... You
well,
could
I
do
think
what
that's
my,
kind of the point.
You could do what my character did.
So basically you're saying
the
problem
beginning.
With the game is your vampires.
Yeah, essentially, that's what I heard, too. I essentially heard that.
I kind of like it if it was maybe the Requiem, maybe human the Requiem.
Wouldn't that be boring? I think they do that
because it is... It does differentiate it from the dark superhero game. Is that
it is a
it's
a,
finite.
A,
you're burning
a modern
up.
Gothic storytelling game, and in gothic horror, you are the monster. The monster is not external; it's you.
Yep. And part of it is like how you deal with having to feed from people who are physically, or even you used to be human.
No, that part
now
I found interesting. It's the whole frenzy thing. That's the frenzy mechanic.
So you're saying it shouldn't be
I can see some of the
like
things. Some of the things they
triggered.
List. Sorry, go on. But just cut each other off.
How easily it gets triggered. It's just like the you see fire and then it's like, oh, frenzy roll.
Well, yeah, because
like,
fire will
like a little
fire will fuck you up.
I'm gonna have to
fire's the stuff that you as a vampire can't heal.
Some of the stuff on the list though is like you see a lighter.
Yeah.
It's a,
I mean, like a bonfire?
Yeah, like a bonfire, yeah. If you're standing next to a bonfire, that's understandable. You don't want to go near it. But if somebody like lights a candle, I mean, it's on the list.
It is, but
it's on the list, but is it?
It's fairly easy to resist.
Yeah, but fire burns people, too. It's like, people don't survive fire. They're not making frenzy rolls to see if they run in fear. I mean, if you had a phobia, maybe.
How did you feel the first time you ever held a gun?
That's a little bit scary, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember it being very imposing. But I don't think there's any situation in which I would run away from it.
Run away from holding the gun?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were trying to beat really hard. Somebody pulls a gun on you. And it's like,
yeah, I don't need that shit. No.
I guess.
I don't mind the frenzy mechanic, Yujiro, but I do think if you would follow it exactly as outlined in the book, it's too many rolls.
It's too easy to trigger. That was my big thing, I guess.
I agree.
But I think that's kind of like we talked about in Humanity and Morality.
Yeah.
You know, if you follow the humanity thing by the letter it's written in there, it gets pretty ridiculous.
If you spin it a certain way. Yeah, it's vaguely worded, but if you kind of, in my opinion, follow the letter as opposed to the spirit.
Yeah. And I think that's what we did with the frenzy. That's what we did with the predator's taint rule as well.
I pretty much just dropped it and kind of made it a bit of flavor where you could kind of sense somebody was
higher or lower
than you, just to kind of instill that. But as few roles as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised Chris didn't weigh on that one as the character who frenzied the most, and it almost every
I'm going to mea culpa that because I made Chris do frenzy rolls, and that's one of the reasons why we did incorporate the glass beads for blood because I misunderstood how much blood he had. I was making my fault. Yeah. Some of the I would say at least two times that I make Chris make frenzy rolls were my fault, not the system.
Oh, okay. All right. Maybe then the frenzying.
Oh, and when did you make a frenzy roll? When did you ever make a frenzy roll?
Well, I did everything I could to, like, resist it. I'm not going to spend blood points. I'm not going to... Yeah.
Well, then, didn't that affect the way your character played?
Oh, yeah.
Well, then, in my opinion, you had to make choices, okay? It would be really useful in combat if I could boost up my stats or use this power.
Nah, not with George, sorry.
Well, all right, fine. But any other person is kind of like, even if I activate this power, I have to spend blood. Ooh, but if I get too low, there's a chance I could frenzy. So you know what? Maybe I won't use that power.
All right.
I think it's an interesting...
Can I copy right there? Because we're starting to get into maybe what will be Campaign Confessions Part 2.
Okay.
Specific stuff. Specific stuff about the actual campaign we played in Detroit. Does anybody have anything more to add about the actual
vampire setting?
Vampire setting or system or World of Darkness?
I think vampire setting is great.
So thumbs up, thumbs down. So
yeah, two thumbs up for vampire.
I would have never guessed that's your opinion.
Yeah, wait. Can I say two fangs up? Where's that lame?
Well, it's on the podcast.
No.
Not editing that out if you change your mind.
Just how lame Wayne is.
I think it.
World of Darkness system.
Loved it. I really like the World of Darkness system.
Vampire the Requiem.
Yeah, it's okay.
All right. In the next episode, if I can stop you from there, maybe we could talk about what to do for our personal sitting and setting and our campaign and what we can do with that.
Okay.
Because we are going to reboot.
Okay.
All right. Yujiro?
World of Darkness system.
Yeah.
Zero man.
A man. Well, that's a surprise. Sorry.
Vampire setting. Oh, I actually loved it. Humanity mechanic and all that. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. So a little bit of a teaser there to find out exactly what Chris would change about it. In Campaign Confessions Part 2, Vampire, which will of course follow this episode.
Yep.
All right. So please join us for Part 2, which will be, I think, going to be a little bit more contentious.
Oh, yeah.
And we all know I don't take criticism well.
So, Claws of the Wild, come out.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. So, we'll see you next time.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Turn it.
Idle Red Hands is recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.